This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Hello, all. Thank you for being here. You are listening to The Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. The Doctor's Lounge is sponsored by the Docs for Patient Care Foundation, a 501c3 organization that promotes freedom of choice in healthcare. Thanks again for taking the time to spend some of your day with us today. In the studio today, we have a very special guest, Dr. Brian Hill. Brian is, in addition to all of these busy things that he is doing, is a full-time practicing physician, which, as we just discussed before going on the air, is really, for doctors, a between 50 and 60-hour work week and every third night call. And in addition to that, he does a great deal of things. If I was going to list them all, it would take the entire hour, but we'll just kind of hit the highlights. In medical school at the Medical College of Virginia, he was in Alpha Omega Alpha, which, if you're not familiar with that, is kind of the Phi Beta Kappa of medical schools. After that, he completed his residency at the University of Maryland Medical System before coming straight to Atlanta and jumping right into not only a full-time job as a physician, but right into the national health care reform debate. He's even had the audacity to write a book. It's called Stop the Noise, A Physician's Quest to Silence the Politics of Healthcare Reform. And that's only one of many things he has written. He's appeared nationally on CNN and Fox News, does these radio things all the time. So we are very grateful to have him here today. Brian, thank you for coming.
It's great to be here, Mike. I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully we have a great time and pass along some good information.
This is going to be great. So before we get started, I want to give you a new email address, and we definitely want to hear from you. We want to hear what you like and what you don't like and anything in between. The new email address is doctorslounge, no apostrophes, no dashes, no interruptions, doctorslounge@americaswebradio.com. One more time, doctorslounge@americaswebradio.com. So before we get into our topic for today, which is going to be the third-party payer system for healthcare, all the problems it creates and maybe some potential solutions, I'm going to give you just a little bit of history of how we ended up with this kind of third-party payer system, because the assumption is that somebody designed this, that somebody actually wanted it the way that it is. It turns out if you look at the history, that's really not true. To understand it, you have to go back almost to the turn of the century, and I mean the turn of the 20th century, the 1900s, when we talk about the Industrial Revolution following the Civil War. And that created lots of very dangerous jobs, right? We have mining jobs, we have steel mill jobs, we have lumber type jobs with lots of very horrific accidents associated with those and a very high rate of accidents. And so the first thing the companies were pressured to do was to come up with some sort of a method of protecting workers, not so much against the healthcare per se, but because of the losses that one would sustain from an accident or a death in terms of not being able to work and provide for your family. So some insurance policies came out to cover these sorts of things. And there was some effort before the mid part of the 20th century to grow those into healthcare policies, but nobody really listened very much to that until this little event came along called the Great Depression. And when that happened, there were people, of course, who still needed health care but lacked the means to pay for it. So the patients were hurting because they had trouble getting care because they couldn't pay, and hospitals that were hurting because they were taking care of people anyway and were not getting paid. And then an idea came up in Dallas where a group of about 1,500 school teachers and a hospital approached each other and said, well, let's talk about paying ahead of time. And for a whopping 50 cents per person per month, this group of teachers signed up to for a benefit of up to 21 days of hospital care per year. And that arrangement yielded the birth of Blue Cross. And I didn't know that till I did the research for this. I find that very interesting. And then this idea really got legs and started to grow. And between 1929, when this was first done between teachers and a Dallas hospital, and 1935, this plan was up and running in 13 states and was called Blue Cross. Eventually, this expanded over the next few years to create Blue Shield, which was the same idea except prepaying physicians. And this was also about the same time that the Kaiser system was born from the Kaiser Construction Company out west. And this got some legs, but it sort of hit a glass ceiling until another major event in our nation's history, known as World War II. And what happened then was that we had most of our able-bodied workers going overseas to serve, either in Europe or in the Pacific, and back here in the 50 states, there was a shortage of workers. The natural forces tended to want to drive wages up, and Congress didn't like that very much, so they passed an act called the Stabilization Act, which did two things. One is that it limited the ability of employers to raise wages to attract those relatively unavailable workers. The other thing it did was to make health benefits or health insurance a non-taxable source of income. And so employers were using health benefits to compete for workers rather than wages. And that was gasoline on the fire. This was what really brought this relatively uncommon concept of prepaying for health care into the limelight, and it grew like crazy. And then, you know, we had major medical sort of policies. It expanded to vision care in 1957, dental benefits in 1959, and this is a very, very important sort of inflection point in the history of what we're calling health insurance, but at this point it's not really insurance anymore. Now it's prepaying. Correct? The strict definition of insurance is to buy risk or sell your risk to an insurer in exchange for money, so that if you get sick or disabled, certain things are covered. But those are supposed to be rare events. Now you go into major medical covering regular checkups, which are not rare events, vision care, which is not a rare event, and dental benefits, which virtually everybody takes advantage of. And so they're still calling it insurance, but it's not, strictly speaking, it's insurance anymore. Now we get into the 1960s, and these are benefit plans, not insurance plans, strictly speaking. And so the mentality changes. Right, Brian?
That's
mentality
right.
Changes. Now you have a situation that instead of like it still is with life insurance where you buy it, you hope you never have to use it, we go to, well, we're going to buy this and we're going to take advantage of it, and the mentality changes. I've been paying all this money and I want to get something back out, right? The person paying those premiums has a different mindset. And then it gets bigger and bigger because now with employer-based insurance, retirees aren't covered, Medicare comes along, Medicaid comes along. And so really the conclusion I think you can't avoid looking at the history over the last almost 100 years is that our current system is really the product of a series of historical accidents,
right,
or at least decisions that were made with short-term vision and not long-term vision. And so with that, I am going to turn the microphone over to someone who is clearly the smartest person in the room, Dr. Brian Hill, and he's going to tell us where this situation leaves us.
Well, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to say that Mike's at the bar low on that or the intelligence question.
Oh, yeah,
actually,
definitely. David left the room. Our engineer has left the room. So that leaves just Brian and I in the room, which, number one, clearly makes him the smartest person and sets the bar pretty low. So it is what it is.
All right. Well, in that case, you're going to hear us talk, or at least hear me talk about, and Mike as well, price. I find price to be a very important issue that really doesn't get discussed very much. It doesn't get brought up a whole heck of a lot. When we look at healthcare and this system that we've developed a very pricey system. As you laid out there, Mike, it's been an accident of history that has really gotten us to where we are. The reason I discuss price so much is because when we talk about healthcare from a policy perspective, we talk about three-legged stools: cost, quality, and access. Cost, when I look at that in that three-legged stool, I kind of relate it to what we do in medicine. There's something in medicine that we talk about called the ABCs of trauma: airway, breathing, circulation.
I remember that well.
Yes. Yeah, the good old trauma center days.
At 3 a.m. in the emergency room, yes.
Well, the thing we've learned is that when somebody comes in the emergency room from a motor vehicle accident and they are not breathing and they're bleeding out and they have, in Mike's case, maybe a tracheal injury, the most important thing that we need to do is establish an airway. Airway's number one. Airway's a priority. If we do not fix the airway, nothing's going to happen to make that patient better. The patient will die. And the thing that we see that's usually most grueling is the bleeding. That's what draws our attention. But the problem is that the bleeding, while it might be something that is right in front of us and right in our face, it is the airway management that is the priority. And so the reason we talk about the ABCs of trauma is that if we don't fix the airway, the patient dies. He's not going to survive.
Airway doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how much blood's going around if there's no oxygen in it.
Yes. You've got 6 minutes without oxygen for that brain to stay, to keep moving. So we've got to fix the airway. So when I look at the cost, quality, and access problem within healthcare, I tell people that cost or price is my airway. We've got to fix the cost, the price problem. And if we don't, we're never going to have access. We're never going to have quality. The thing that Mike talked about a little bit, it's funny, you mentioned them paying 50 cents, a month, in order to have access to this hospital coverage. If we look at the medical inflation, I'm sure we all go, I'd love to pay 50 cents a month to be able to have access to my
sign
hospital
me up.
Or my doctor. Sign
Absolutely.
Me up. Well, there's this wonderful thing called medical inflation out here. It's the rate of rise of the cost of medicine over time. And we know that medical inflation is rising at about 1.5% greater than what we say our gross domestic product is. We're spending more money at a higher rate every year in medicine than what we're actually able to produce in our economy.
So as a percentage of GDP, medical care gets a higher and higher share.
So we're at 17.8% right now. We're expected to go up to 19.9% by 2020. We're spending more and more money on health care. Well, if we take that medical inflation rate and apply that, go back to the 1930s, early 20th century, go to the 1930s, and apply that medical inflation rate to a dozen eggs. Those dozen eggs would cost $80 today.
If we put the medical inflation rate on eggs, going back 80 years.
If we put the medical inflation rate on a pound of bacon, it would cost $122.
Okay, interesting.
Do we worry about people being able to afford bacon and eggs for breakfast?
We don't.
Everybody has it.
Not compared to healthcare, we don't.
Not compared to healthcare costs. So the problem then becomes, and why in the world is healthcare costs going up so dramatically, so drastically? Now, understanding that bacon and eggs are a very different product line, they're brought to the marketplace very differently, than what healthcare is. But nonetheless, just shining a light on some of that cost differential between this rapid rise in cost in healthcare compared to other things that we see within our society should at least make us pause for a second and go, why is price so high in healthcare? People can't access it if it's too expensive. That's the problem.
That is.
So we've got to find a way to start parsing through some of this cost problem. Just some general numbers, and most people, I'm sure, are quite well aware of these numbers, and if they've listened to the show, they know this. The right now we're spending, about 17.8% of our GDP on healthcare. Average person in the United States, about $9,000 per person we're spending on healthcare on an annual basis. When the median income in the U.S. is $51,000, that's spending an awful lot of people's household goods on healthcare. This is going to create problems. It's going to be a real struggle. And so, it's interesting. We're seeing this struggle, of course, expanding not only to households, but this is hitting businesses. Businesses now are taking a look at their healthcare premium costs, and they're seeing that their costs are rising more rapidly than what they are actually making on an annual basis. The medical inflation rate for premiums for businesses are going up greater than their productivity.
Well, it's the individual version of the gross domestic product issue, right? As a nation, the proportion's getting higher for what we spend. Individuals, you take that number home, and what individual families are spending on health care is becoming an ever greater proportion of their total income. So at the macro scale and the individual family scale, it's the same conclusion.
Exactly. And we are looking at this, and the CBO has obviously evaluated this. This was the impetus behind change. And when the CBO actually made a comment on this, and the CBO relayed in a recent report when they were talking about healthcare costs, they said, although healthcare spending in the United States has grown more slowly in recent years than it had previously, high and rising levels of such spending continue to pose a challenge not only for the federal government, but also for state and local governments, businesses, and households. Cost is going up and becoming a real problem. So we've got to figure out a way to fix this cost issue.
Outstanding. Excellent description of where we stand today. We're coming up on a hard break. You are listening to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
For years, Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center has been providing outstanding care to patients of all ages. They are dedicated to patient satisfaction and have been the recipient of the Georgia Otolaryngology Association Patient Satisfaction Award. They welcome any questions you may have about their services. Their practice includes treatment of asthma, allergies, sleep apnea, snoring, hearing impairments, and chronic sinus disease. Dr. Elena George is a board-certified ear, nose, and throat surgeon. Her training in New York has included training at Manhattan Eye, Ear, and Throat Hospital and Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. She believes in practicing both the art and science of medicine. All patients are seen by Dr. George. All treatment options are discussed, and time will be spent to answer all questions. Their office is located in Atlanta at 1776 Peachtree Road in Suite 260 North Tower, two blocks south of Piedmont Hospital. They are open Monday through Friday, 8:30 a.m. until 4 p.m. Additional details are available at www.peachtreeentcenter.com. At Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center, you can be confident that you are in good hands with their professional team.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
We're back. You are listening to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. With me in the studio today is a very special guest, Dr. Brian Hill. Brief reintroduction, he is with Urology Specialists of Atlanta, and in addition to 60 hours a week as a full-time physician, he somehow found the time to write a book, appear on radio and television multiple times, and become someone who I consider one of the leading thinkers in the healthcare system today and how to fix it. So we were talking in the first segment about the history of the third-party payer system, how this was really a product of a series of, you know, historical accidents and events over which, you know, we didn't have a whole lot of control. We had the Great Depression, which caused certain things. We had World War II, which caused certain things, including the passage of a law that made employer-sponsored health insurance almost unavoidable. And now we're left with a system that completely eliminates the price tension between the provider and the patient who is receiving the services. So I'm going to give the microphone back to Brian and let him pick up where he left off. One thing first, our new email address. Please email us with your thoughts, positive, negative, anything in between, at, is it the Doctor's Lounge or Doctor's Lounge? Doctor's Lounge. So Doctor's Lounge, no apostrophes or anything. Doctor's Lounge at AmericasWebRadio.com. One more time, write it down, Doctor's Lounge at AmericasWebRadio.com. Brian, it's all yours.
So, Mike, we were talking about price in the first segment and the importance of pricing things at their proper level. And the issue that we get into within healthcare and the problem that really drove this great debate within healthcare, and it's one that, actually, I have to say, I'm very happy that's come forward. We've needed to have this discussion for a long time.
We sure have.
Healthcare is becoming increasingly problematic. I generally tell people I don't care where you stand politically or on what side of the aisle. We can all take a look at each other and say that we're spending too much on healthcare without getting that proper value out of healthcare.
Well, that's an important point. This is not a Democratic issue. This is not a Republican issue or a conservative issue or a liberal or libertarian issue. If you look at the history, this has been developing for almost 100 years across every political party imaginable. So this is not a bashing of the current system or recent changes per se. This is something that's been going on for a long, long time.
Right. Now, our point is just trying to find a way to fix, you know, this problem so that we can do what we want to do, make sure that our patients can access us and get high-quality health care at a reasonable price. So going back to the price and some of our discussion before, the question becomes, why in the world is price going up so much? You know, what is some of that impetus behind it? And kind of the general idea of really any economic transaction is that the way you maintain value, and when I look at value, I really kind of think about value as the quality of the service over the price that you're paying for it. how do you maintain value in a transactional relationship? Well, the value comes as an understanding of the two people that are involved in that transaction. And in medicine, healthcare is a commodity. No matter how much people want to put that aside and ignore that as a reality, it is.
Absolutely.
And so the two people that are directly involved in that transaction of healthcare is a physician and a patient. And the problem that we've done with our healthcare system, as you so eloquently explained with regards to the historical movement towards this insurance construct, is that we've completely separated patients from control of their healthcare dollars. We've separated physicians from understanding the price of the goods and services they bring forward. Most physicians, if you ask them, and I would challenge people listening to this, ask your physician how much it is for the CT scan that they just ordered, or how much is it even for the office visit that you're sitting there and they're having a conversation with. Most physicians wouldn't know their price of what they're charging. The system is...
Agreed. Yeah. I mean, in many cases, I wouldn't. I mean, you know, you and I both order CT scans commonly, but since that's going somewhere else and they've negotiated a rate with a third-party payer,
right,
and, you know, I can, you know, we have so many of those, it's hard to keep up with our own. I can't tell somebody what's going on if they're getting a CT scan at a different entity. I have no idea and no way of easily finding out what it's going to cost them. So how do we bring cost into the conversation under those conditions?
And unfortunately, it's in this system, and the way we're set up, it's becoming increasingly difficult to do that. Now, there are some movements, and you and I talked about this previously before the show, there are some movements now trying to shine some light of transparency into the cost of medicine. And we need to discuss, and we will as we move along, why that is a bit of a folly. Right now, these companies that are shining the light in the cost of medicine are shining a light on a very, very expensive product that is higher than what it should be. Our goal should be trying to find a reason why that price is so expensive and knock the price down. So when we do actually have a discussion about price transparency, it's actually being done at a reasonable price. But again, some of the underlying push and some of the problematic issues with this construct of our healthcare system is that we have separated the two people that are directly involved in that transaction from the price. There's no price tension. Everything, that we do in a transactional relationship, going to Best Buy to buy a TV, you're going to go, can I afford it? Am I getting value for the cost of that product? And if the product is either not a quality level product or I can't afford it, I'm going to have to adjust that which I am purchasing.
Yeah, well, and if the flat screen TV is overpriced, then it doesn't sell. And what does Best Buy do?
Drops the price.
Drop the price because you have a much more pure model. If somebody else was buying that TV for you as you walked into Best Buy, you wouldn't care what it cost because somebody's going to buy it for you. You're going to want the biggest, fanciest TV, more than you need, maybe more than even fits on your wall because you've prepaid.
You're exactly right.
You're trying to get something back out of that.
So the interesting thing, and the OECD, Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, has looked at how much the U.S. citizen pays as a percentage of their healthcare dollar. So the average U.S. citizen pays about 12 cents out of every healthcare dollar, directly out of their pocket. So I always tell people, pause for a second, and then we'll go to an automobile and buy a car instead of maybe go buying a TV.
Okay.
If you go and say, all right, I'm going to go buy a car, and I've got $10,000 in my pocket to go buy that car, and you walk onto the dealership, and the dealership says, today's your lucky day. Instead of paying dollar for dollar for that car, you're only going to pay 12 cents on the dollar for that car, and somebody else is going to pay that remaining 88%. Now, the tongue-in-cheek thing, of course, in medicine is, well, you're still paying that 88%. You just don't know it.
You don't feel it because you don't. It got deducted from your paycheck. You didn't see it. You didn't think about it. Your employer covered a huge fraction of that cost, so it feels
like
free.
Like 12 cents on the dollar.
Yeah.
So that $10,000 now becomes, $84,000.
Uh-huh.
So I ask most people, what would you do? Would you go and buy that nice used Honda Accord in the corner, or would you go around the back and buy that nice Mercedes-Benz SLK?
That's no-brainer as far as I'm concerned. For 12 cents on the dollar, I'll take the expensive car home.
And the dealer, what's the dealer's motivation? Mercedes-Benz SLK it is.
Yes, absolutely.
Because we want to make our customer happy, and, well, it doesn't really matter because the customer's not paying for it. So the understanding of value goes away because we've hidden price from that equation.
And that's what we've done in healthcare. And that's one of the reasons why healthcare is so expensive. We've hidden price from this equation. So we've got to find a way, one, to bring more price transparency back into this, but also more cost control, price awareness between the two people that are involved in that transaction, the patient and the physician.
Well, the car metaphor is great, Brian, because it also allows you to address what happens to patient behavior. Right. If you brought home a super duper $80,000 Mercedes for 12 cents on the dollar, well, you know, you run it up on the curb, no big deal. You know, hit the back of the garage with it, well, no big deal. I got this car for a song. You know, you didn't put blood, sweat, and tears into bringing that car home and treat it like a cream puff. And so we see the same thing with patient behavior and how they take care of themselves in the setting of chronic disease, diabetes, congestive heart failure. If, you know, your next visit to the doctor feels free, or at least 12% of the whole total, then your motivation to stay out of the doctor's office by taking care of yourself is 84% gone.
And that's exactly correct. It's interesting. If you read some papers out there, and there was an interesting paper talking about moral hazard is really what that's referring to, that if we shield people from the outcomes of risky behavior by covering some of the costs of that, you know, that risky behavior, they're more likely to pursue risky behavior. Insurance companies know this. They know that if they insure a house, you know, house is more likely to burn down, you know, when they're insured than when they're not. So they actually adjust their cost based on that moral hazard. Well, within medicine, some people say moral hazard doesn't exist. You know, nobody likes going to the doctor more often than what they want to. Who likes wearing those cute little kind of paper gowns and have to sit in front of us and, you know,
right,
be half naked in a weird
and
place?
Rotted and, yeah.
Well, it's more subtle than that. It's not that you know, just in your face, I'm going to go overutilize this healthcare system. The subtlety comes in that chronic disease aspect a little bit. I tell people from you know, experience of seeing patients and, again, having that insider view. I am a urologist, but I have a tendency to, well, talk quite a bit and talk to my patients a lot about health and wellness. I'm a bit of a health and wellness freak. I think it's very important for our healthcare system. The chronic diseases are destroying our healthcare system. Our obesity rate is 69, and overweight rate is 69.8% in the U.S. I mean, we know it's $196 billion is what we spend on obesity in the U.S. of unnecessary healthcare dollars, leads to lower well-being, lower happiness. But the problem in the system, though, is like I said, it's more subtle. What happens is that if I have a patient that comes to my office and I say, Joe, you're putting on 20 pounds over the past year. You're 54 years old. Your dad died at 56 years old with a heart attack. You know, Joe, you're going to work and you're sitting on your hiney all day and you're going and eating a Twinkie for a snack between eating your meat and potatoes at lunch, and you're going home and having a beer after dinner and having a cookie while you're watching the ball game and going back. You got to exercise. You got to work out. You got to do the same thing. But heck, your cholesterol level's going up. We're going to put you on a cholesterol medicine to maybe bring that down a little bit. And then Joe starts to think for a second. He goes, okay, well, gosh, they put me on this pill that's going to bring my cholesterol down, so it's going to make me a little bit better, and I'm not paying that much for the pill because it doesn't cost me that much. And maybe I have to see my doctor four times a year now because, well, you know, I've got this cholesterol pill, now I've got to get my blood drawn four times a year to check my liver function test. So, well, I'll see him four times a year, but again, I'm only paying 12 cents on the dollar for that visit anyway. And, well, you know what? I kind of like my meat and potatoes, and I kind of like my donut at Dunkin' Donuts on the way into the office. And, you know, to join a gym, that costs money.
Well, the pill only cost me 12 cents on the dollar, and you know, Dr. Hill gave me this pill that's going to fix me. It's going to fix me, and yes, it's cheaper to buy the pill than it is to do the healthcare membership.
And it's easier as well emotionally, and it's easier as well physically, and it's people are comfortable, and so the problem with Joe is that Joe will take the pill and he'll continue to put on weight. He'll continue to follow the same lifestyle problems, and he's going to develop diabetes, and he's going to develop heart disease, and he's going to have a stroke, and he's going to have degenerative joint disease. And Joe's going to have to see his doctor an infinite more number of times as a result of all of that. And it was a subtle move that it was cheaper and easier for him to just buy into the healthcare system rather than to buy into himself and take care of himself. And until we find a way to not have this moral hazard and this alteration in the understanding of the value of healthcare change to make Joe more aware of it, then we're not only, you know, creating a rising price, but we're creating an unhealthy society and unhealthy people, and that's wrong. That's what we've got to fix, because we've got to fix this problem.
So as we close the second segment here coming up on a hard break, I think what Brian is trying to say, and he can correct me if I'm wrong after the break, but we're trying to bring skin in the game to patients and to providers, because without that knowledge of price, it's impossible to have skin in the game, and it's impossible to have the downward pressure on price that the pure model of business exchange creates. We're at a hard break. You are listening to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
This is Michael Gano with Insight to Israel. Every day, the Israeli Defense Force finds itself on the front line of the war with the militant arm of Islam. Surrounded by enemies from within and without, they fight for the only Jewish state. Military service is mandatory, ladies serving 2 years and men serving three right out of high school. While young people in other democracies are busy traveling or attending university, Israeli men and women gear up for basic training. In a world of heads of state, politicians, ambassadors, diplomats, and a leftist media, many times our voice at the grassroots level is drowned out. So we started an ongoing project called Hershey's for Heroes. Patriot conservatives from all over the U.S. are sending Hershey's chocolate bars with a note of thanks for defending Israel. Won't you join us by sending a sweet message to the IDF? For information, please see my Facebook page at Michael Gano. Thank you, God bless Patriot conservatives, and God bless Israel in her struggle for sovereignty and security.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Solution providers, are you aware of the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism's multiple marketing platforms? You're invited to get a little closer to IHC with our Solution Provider Membership Marketing Program. Through IHC's exclusive Solution Provider Membership, your business gets an all-access pass to engaging your prospects. This membership embeds your business within the Institute, which immediately aligns your company, its solutions, and your key executives with the nationally credible IHC brand, and shows your support of the healthcare consumerism movement as a market-wide solution. And that's just the beginning. Contact IHC's Managing Director, Brent Macy, today at bmacy@theihcc.com.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
We're back. You are listening to The Doctor's Lounge, where you get insight into the private conversations that doctors have amongst themselves. You are listening to AmericasWebRadio.com. We have very special guest in the studio today, Dr. Brian Hill. I don't have time to introduce him all over again because his accolades are so long and so broad in depth and scope. So we're going to jump right back in and talk about some of the consequences of a third-party payer system and some of the consequences of some of the most recent legislation in the form of the Affordable Care Act and what that's doing to the organization of healthcare at sort of the local and regional level, right?
So great, Mike. Looking at healthcare, and we've been talking about price, we've been talking about the real issue that we see within, or at least certainly I see within healthcare, is that it costs so much. People can't afford things that cost too much, and then they can't access things that cost too much. So some of the big impetus behind our change in the healthcare system was we've got to find a way to bring costs down, thus the Affordable Care Act. So that was a real big push that created a lot of the stir, of course, with regards to changing the healthcare system. Unfortunately, as we move down this pathway of this healthcare law, the semantics kind of changed from Affordable Care Act to, well, maybe Access to Health Insurance Act, which really didn't make anything more affordable on the care side of the street. Again, going back to I always tell people price is my airway. If we don't fix the price problem, you know, then we're never going to be able to solve our healthcare system.
Nothing else really matters. It's all sort of patched together with duct tape.
So we didn't fix price. We created a system that gives more access to health insurance, but that health insurance is still trying to access a very costly healthcare system. The thing that the Affordable Care Act did, though, is to give people some more access to perhaps health insurance, but it created a level of angst, fear, worry, uncertainty in the healthcare system.
Yes, indeed.
Fear drives change. And sometimes change is good. Sometimes change leads to untoward events. And one of the untoward events that we're seeing out of this movement in healthcare is what I kind of talk about as the consolidation craze. People are running together to join together today more than they ever have before, or at least since the early 90s when they came through with the Hillary Care approach.
Agreed.
So the problem with healthcare now is that we've got two different movements going on within the healthcare system, this healthcare industry. And I generally see this as stakeholders, hospital systems, physicians, medical imaging, all of these people going, okay, we have a $2.7 trillion industry, healthcare industry, and I'm going to try to do everything I possibly can to keep control of my piece of that pie. And when uncertainty comes and people start getting worried and change starts coming, industries consolidate. They come together as a way to try to be protective and to maintain their interests.
Which has happened in other industries outside of healthcare historically as well.
Exactly. We've seen it in the pharmaceutical industry. We've seen it in the airline industry. We've seen it in the computer-based industry. We saw it in the pharmaceutical industry. What we've seen in these other industries along the way is what we have yet to learn in healthcare, which unfortunately I suspect we will learn, is that when these industries consolidate, the price goes up. We start losing ingenuity and innovation within those systems. The consumer, in this case our patients, you know, start having less access, less quality. It really doesn't become a very consumer-centric industry when that happens. And so healthcare industry is doing that right now. Hospitals. So the two different systems. So we're having hospital systems, you know, that are certainly coming together. We're seeing systems being bought up and joining together throughout the United States. Historically, you know, we have always seen a bit of movement, hospital consolidation, but over the past 5 years, we've seen a rapid uptick in hospital consolidation, where from 2009 to most recently here, we've seen about a doubling in the rate of hospital consolidation. Hospitals are coming together to join together in large systems. Now, generally, most of these hospitals will say, well, we're doing this because we're going to create some economies of scale. We want to move towards population health management. We want to make sure that we're bringing some of the leadership from one hospital to another to try to help increase innovation and try to increase efficiencies within the system.
All kind of heady, altruistic kind of stuff.
All sounds great, but historically, and studies have shown pretty consistently, even within the hospital industry, that hospital consolidation leads to shocking higher prices.
Shocking.
Shocking indeed. It's just like we see when other oligopolies develop. So there was a study called the Synthesis Project done by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation in 2012 that looked at hospital consolidation, and they found that when hospitals consolidate, prices went up by about 20% in some markets. Huge bump in prices. There was also a study by PricewaterhouseCooper. PricewaterhouseCooper found a 20.3% increase in hospital prices when they consolidated. There was an economist, Lee Moore Daphne, that studied this from at the University of Chicago, I believe. And he found that when hospitals consolidated in highly consolidated markets, very tight markets, they saw price rises as much as 40%. What hospitals can do is that when they come together, they can create more leverage in the marketplace for negotiating, you know, with the commercial marketplace. So they start basically creating the big bully approach in the market. So they can drive prices up by consolidating. So this consolidation movement is running rampant. There was a recent study, you know, that was done that looked at hospital consolidation, and they found that about 78% of hospitals right now are either in the process of consolidating or are in that pathway of moving towards a consolidation with another system. Only about 13% of hospitals are looking to stay independent. So this consolidation movement is coming, and when we see consolidation, we are going to see a rising price. Now, historically, we have not seen, when these hospitals have come together, an improvement in patient care. And that has not improved. That was looked at the Synthesis Project as well. Now, some of the debate will be, well, the studies at that time, these hospitals were not integrated. They weren't necessarily sharing information. They were coming together certainly to create a bully in the marketplace to drive prices.
But the altruists will say that, yes, there's going to be some sort of magic bullet of central planning that eliminates duplicated tests and duplicated visits and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know of any data that even suggests that that's actually true, you know, in the trenches of healthcare.
No, not yet. So everybody's kind of holding that out on a little hope of the future that perhaps maybe if we do this, maybe perhaps this movement will lead to more integration and less utilization, you know, less recurring test ordering. But that's a hope. It hasn't been shown yet.
It's a lot of hand-waving and a lot of sort of, you know, pointing to a rosy horizon. But I don't know that that's all it is at the moment.
But what we know is that when hospitals come together, prices go up.
That part's already real.
So the second thing that we're seeing, and this is the big movement, and Mike, you and I see this, I'm sure, when we're – and we've had this conversation ourselves, but we see it around the table.
In fact, we've had this conversation in a real doctor's lounge in a real hospital not far from here. So having you on the show is about the most the truest expression of a doctor's lounge radio show than we could possibly have.
Exactly.
Because we've had this conversation in a doctor's lounge.
Physicians are struggling right now. Ask any physician out there, and they're worried. They're worried about whether their business model is sustainable. I was actually having a conversation in a doctor's lounge last night after a case, after a surgery I did, with one of the nephrologists. And she was expressing to me she's not sure how she's going to be able to stay in business. She's with a couple other nephrologists, and they're looking at different health systems and joining these other health systems. And they're going, I'm at this point in my career where I thought I was going to be okay, and I've been practicing medicine. She's a wonderful nephrologist, and she's distraught about how in the world is she going to be able to keep her business afloat? So that is driving the second part of this equation. Physicians are joining hospitals.
Well, the bar just keeps getting raised higher and higher and higher. I mean, we have regulatory burdens. We have malpractice insurance burdens. We have electronic medical records burdens. And this is not what doctors chose to get into medicine for. We got into medicine because we like to look people in the eye and help them get better. We didn't get into this to jump through government hoops, to live in fear that the expense of trying to follow the law was going to be so high that we have to worry about whether or not there's going to be any money to take home after the rent's paid and after the staff is paid and after the malpractice premiums are paid and after the electronic medical records bill and the network bill and the computer bill is paid, that there's going to be enough to take home to pay the mortgage. And as a result, you know, doctors are doing what I would consider sort of the ultimate outsourcing.
Yes.
And say, we're just going to give all that non-medical stuff to a system and say, you handle the HIPAA compliance, you handle the EMR, you handle the malpractice, because I got into this to take care of patients. And, you know, when you're facing that decision as an individual, I mean, it's painful.
It's very painful. Physicians do have a very independent streak. Most physicians I talk to want to maintain their level of independence. Unfortunately, the burden of the overhead cost in healthcare are rising so drastically that it really is creating that push towards, you know, this integration into the hospital systems. The problems for patients is we see the same thing. Part of the candy that's being thrown out there from these hospital systems that are drawing physicians to this consolidation is payment. You know, these hospital systems are promising physicians they're going to get paid more. Physicians are hearing from the different systems, we'll pay you 66% more tomorrow to do the same thing you did today when you come and join us. You know, these physicians are seeing that their compensation through the commercial marketplace will go up 40 and 50% when they join a hospital system, because the hospital system has leverage to negotiate against the insurers, whereas a single individual in practice does not. So these guys join a health system. 40-50% increase commercial payers. They join a hospital. They get an increased reimbursement of 80% from Medicare.
You know, again, because in the case of Medicare, it's an arbitrary third-party payer rule.
Yep.
It's one of those things that completely circumvents the free market and has two different prices for exactly the same product delivered in different settings, and that ends up being the problem. We're going to finish this in part four. We are at the hard break. You are listening to The Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options, such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
Hi, this is Kate Copsey inviting you to listen year-round to America's Homegrown Veggie Show every Saturday at 10 a.m.
Certification. Do you know why becoming a certified healthcare consumerism specialist is more important than ever in 2014? Adding this specialized designation to your credentials tells employers or your clients that you understand how much our industry has changed and how to navigate that change successfully. IHC University's certification program offers coursework both online and live at their biannual forum conference series, and testing is completed online. Reaffirm your position as a leader in the health and benefit management industry. Download our certification overview and learn more at www.theihcc.com. That's www.theihcc.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
We're back. You are listening to the Doctor's Lounge on americaswebradio.com. If you would like to email us, we would love to hear from you. We like to hear what you like, what you don't like. The email address is doctorslounge, no apostrophes or anything else, doctorslounge at americaswebradio.com. So we're back with Brian Hill, and we're finishing up the topic of hospital and doctor consolidation as a product of the ultimate product of third-party payer systems and all the arbitrary rules, regulations, perverse incentives that go with it. So go ahead, Brian, and finish up that piece.
Sure. So we're talking about everybody kind of coming together under these umbrellas of these large integrated networks. We can call them an integrated network. The reality of them, they're oligopolies in the marketplace of healthcare.
Yes.
But what we're seeing, and we were just talking about the physicians moving under the auspices of hospital and the pressure on physician practices to make that happen, well, we know that when that does happen, whether we move under the auspices of a hospital or whether we just become part of an integrated network, that the price for the service of care that we deliver in our office goes up, whether it's 40-50% in the commercial market, whether it's 80% in Medicare. You know, we know that when we work under the auspices of a hospital, we get paid more.
We get paid more.
Well, the problem is that the price spiral does not stop there, because what's going to happen that as these physicians move under the auspices of a hospital, well, if we then in the wink, wink, nod, nod of moving into the integrated network or becoming a hospital-based employee, it means that we're then going to start utilizing the hospital resources. Hospital resources being imaging. If we get a CT scan on somebody, and we would normally have ordered that in an outpatient setting, if I own a CT scan in my office, if I get a CT scan in my office, I do it at about a third to a half the cost of the hospital. Hospital buys me out. They buy my CT scanner. Guess where those CT scans get done?
They get done, under at least on paper, under the auspices of the hospital in a different fee schedule.
Which is about 2 to 3 times higher than what that patient would have paid if it were
otherwise.
Just, you know,
and let's be clear. The point of this conversation is not to accuse the doctors that are doing this or the hospitals of doing this of any kind of malice, of any kind of evil. This isn't happening because hospitals are evil entities. They're doing what they have to do to survive. When doctors do this, doctors are doing what they have to do to survive. So this is not a question of – we're not hospital bashing here.
No,
we're not
at all.
We're not doctor bashing here. This is – the point of this conversation is to demonstrate what happens when you have a third-party payer system that takes price tension out of the equation between provider and patient, and all this weird stuff happens. You know, when these decisions get made one doctor at a time, one practice at a time, mm-hmm. one hospital at a time, they're doing what they have to do. The point here is we need to get rid of the incentives that make this absolutely necessary to survive, not that the people who are doing this need to somehow see the light and stop acting badly. We're doing what we have to do.
No, you're exactly right. And I'm a realist.
Yeah.
You look around realistically and you look at the economics of healthcare and the way the model is set up. The model is set up that this – in essence, really has to happen. Again, I was telling about my, you know, the nephrologist I was talking about, you know, last night. Her practice is going out of thinking where they're worried about going out of business, and if they go out of business, they can't provide health care. They're done.
Yeah.
And so it's the economics of the way the system's constructed that's driving this. That's the problem. That's the disease that has not been dealt with, and that's the problem is we haven't managed that. with this healthcare law or way the system is moving. And so the system, the way it's constructed and the way it's set up, is that we are consolidating, and consolidation just leads to higher prices. And so that's going to become the problem, because the disease was not taken care of at the initial reform approach towards healthcare. And so we've never really dealt with that real problem, which is exactly like you've mentioned, the price tension, you know, within our system. I tell people, you know, that practicing healthcare, what you and I do every day, Mike, is not expensive. And you know that. When you sit in the office and have a conversation with somebody about a sinusitis, it's not expensive to have a conversation.
No.
When I have a conversation with somebody about an elevated PSA, it's not expensive. When I even have to go operate on somebody with a stone that they're passing and do a surgery on a stone that they're passing, that's not expensive for me to do that.
No, the expensive part comes somewhere else.
The expensive part comes from dealing with the healthcare system. And, you know, and all we've done is we've grown this healthcare system and consolidated this healthcare system, you know, rather than allowing the care and healthcare to move to the forefront and not have the system become this overriding cost-driving proposition. And so we've got to minimize the system impact on healthcare, healthcare being actually treating people, not this industry of healthcare.
Right, not this jumping through hoops to satisfy regulations, jumping through hoops to satisfy documentation requirements. You know, I'm always impressed when I'm in the OR that the folks, the scrub techs and the nurses and the folks that are in there with me are spending at least as much time, if not more time, going through the paperwork and the documentation and all that kind of stuff than they are participating directly in the care of the patient that's getting the procedure.
Right. So a couple numbers out there. I mean, we know physicians on average spend about 22% of their time now doing paperwork, you know, doing nothing that actually has to manage and take care of patients, but paperwork, that's a day a week. We know that the average physician practices spends about 14-15% of their revenue dealing with the insurance company.
Which, if you do the numbers, comes to some staggering raw figure of somewhere between $60,000 and $85,000
per year.
I mean, think about what you could do with $85,000 per doctor. How much would that improve access? How much would that improve quality of care if we could take that money that right now we're spending on nothing that has to do with touching patients,
right,
and turn that money around into actually taking care of the patient who doesn't have insurance, or the patient who has trouble getting access for some other reason, you know, even if it's hiring another doctor to make more appointments available for people who got their card.
Right.
Right. We have this illusion in the, you know, inside the Beltway about healthcare that, you know, if you give a patient an insurance card, you solve the problem. Right, it's done. We gave them a card, and that's it. That means that now we can say that instead of, you know, 30 million uninsured, it's 30 million minus one, and that fixes the problem. Well, that person with the card, you know, if we have nephrologists that are thinking about closing their doors, now, you know, the person who's got that insurance card, if they need a nephrologist, it really doesn't matter whether they're holding a card or not, does it?
Does not. And that's then that becomes the big problem. Inefficient, this is always makes me smile. An efficient urology practice has about 6 staff members per practicing urologist. I have no idea how that would ever be considered efficient when 70% of those staff members have nothing to do with taking care of a patient. They have to deal with managing the healthcare system. And if we could actually take some of those people that are having to deal with the insurance company and the regulatory burden of having to match pay for performance and making sure we get meaningful use on our computer-based systems, if we
Absolutely.
Could take those people and say, all right, instead of hiring somebody to do that, maybe I want to hire a dietitian. So that as a primary care physician, I can bring a dietitian into my office. I can bring an exercise physiologist into my office. I can go and start taking a look at my patients that are unhealthy, that are sick, that are overweight, and start utilizing my resources to actually take care of patients rather than utilizing my resources, which are very limited in a physician's office, to deal with the healthcare system. Imagine what we could do to make our society healthier, to actually drop healthcare costs by managing the chronic diseases, by trying to be proactive and preventive. But we can't do that in this system right now because we're barely able to keep afloat because we've got to deal with the system not taking care of patients.
We have hundreds of thousands of pages of regulations. If you add up HIPAA, OSHA, meaningful use electronic medical records. I mean, we can go through all of these things, and you can spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on consultants with the purest of intentions. We want to be legal. We pay a huge amount of money to people like that to say, look, just make sure that we are operating within the law. That's all we want. And that costs hundreds of thousands of dollars per year, which, again, is being taken from patient care and going to arbitrary stuff. And the regulations change. You may say, okay, we're going to spend that money once. We're going to have a consultant go through a practice, be sure everything is right.
Right.
Then the HIPAA omnibus bill comes along. And you might have been right before, but you're not right now. Now I got to turn around and spend $100,000 all over again to be sure that, you know, I was right in 2011, make sure I'm right in 2012, 13, or 14, and leave huge amounts of money on the table unavailable for patient care.
And that's the and so that becomes the real issue, that why is price so high? Price is so high, one, we've lost the price tension and the awareness of price between the two people that are involved in the healthcare exchange. But two, is that the system that now is managing that price, the cost between the two involved in that exchange, has become so burdensome that it has made the cost so much greater than it should be. And the only way we're going to start impacting price and really start attacking the disease in our healthcare system, price, is by trying to separate the system from that exchange of healthcare in every place we possibly can. There's an understanding, and I understand that we need health insurance. And you mentioned before, health insurance is there for catastrophic events. You know, so we need some third party to manage the risk of catastrophic events for hospital-based stays, for a heart bypass surgery. But do we really need all of that burden of insurance and regulations to deal with when somebody comes in to have a blood pressure checked and manage their blood pressure? Do we need to have
That's not true insurance anymore.
It's not insurance.
Right? So what you're proposing is bring the what the insurance companies are doing now to the true definition of insurance.
Yes.
Right? Protection of risk against rare catastrophic events and all of the other activity within healthcare falls under different models. So talk about solutions.
So I truly believe we need to get the proper care in the proper setting at the proper price with the proper level of insurance, so that outpatient care should be outpatient care that should not have insurance. It should not be something that is paid for through a third-party payer mix. I believe we need to separate, you know, the hospital from outpatient care. And so there are some groups that are doing this now in the primary care setting that are starting to separate themselves from the insurance model, going, I'm not taking insurance at all. I will, on the primary care, have you see me for $50 a month, $65 a month, annual set fee to take care of you every path across primary care, blood pressure checks, EKGs. And they're finding that they can provide high quality, high access to health care, you know, at a very, very low cost.
And that's been talked about.
And we
Hal
need to
Schertz
do that.
Talked
yes.
about with the Epiphany Healthcare thing. Hal and Lee Gross talked about that a couple of weeks ago. So we're coming up on the end of the show. Brian, thank you so much for spending time with us. Thank you, all the listeners, for spending your time with us. You have been in the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
This is America's Web Radio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.